I know why.
All right, this is Pure Decking number 34 for August 16th, 1941. And apparently, Heavy knows why.
I do. Well, you know, we've been out and about, and we went to Gen Con. We traveled around, you know, warping in and out of time and things.
Okay. Let's finish up the show here. Obviously, I'm Morps, Heavy's here, and we've got Nox. Nox, you still around?
Look, the blue box was not supposed to be a part of the tour. We can't be held responsible for any problems that may arise.
Okay.
Non sequitur after non sequitur. I like it. So, what's up, guys?
Well, a couple of interesting things, you know, as I said in the news and stuff, we'll talk about those in a minute. Personally, I'm glad to have a chance to sit down and relax after Gen Con. It was good to meet y'all, for a short period of time, and it was actually really fun.
Yeah, it was good to meet y'all, but at the same time, it wasn't quite so, you know, good to meet you.
At the same time, wearing the bulletproof vest while sleeping wasn't all that comfortable.
Yeah, you know, the whole, sleeping with one eye open and the knife under the pillow and all that good happy stuff. But actually, in all seriousness, I think everybody's made it back home after Gen Con with the exception of RU, who I believe is still swimming.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's going to take him a while. But it was cool. We actually did get a really decent show of IHN recorded, which will be up at some point.
Actually, I just got done editing the live show this afternoon. I had to find the one thing we had to censor, and more importantly, break it up into four parts, because good lord, also I exported that at super high quality, because we had such a nice recording for a change. And I just got done uploading that, and I think I'm actually going to start cross-posting both. I'm going to start putting the IHN shows on the Galaxy 15 site as well. I think Suave still wants to keep them on the IveNothing.org site, but I don't know what the deal is with that. So I think just to be safe, we're going to start posting them in both places, maybe, or maybe he's going to let the other site die. I don't know. I was hoping to have him on the show tonight so I could badger him about this.
Yeah, wait till he's back up in Canada, and then he'll have a chance to get back into his groove.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, well, we'll see.
Well, I know RU was talking about trying to consolidate everything down under one site, which could get messy.
Yeah, so. It could, but it's something, to be honest, we have needed to do. We have to clean up that RSS feed or just say fuck it and start with brand new, and then we'll have the legacy RSS feed. But that needs to get cleaned up, and we need to start having this shit up.
Well,
on,
it's not a big deal to clean up the RSS feed. The question becomes, is anybody still using the RSS feed?
Well, they will once we put it up on some of the more well-known aggregation sites.
Well, they will doesn't really justify a legacy.
Yeah, no, that's not my question. It's not, will anybody use a new RSS feed? Because obviously they will, because Galaxy 15 is going to be the greatest thing on the internet. Ha-ha! No, it's a question of, is anybody using any old feeds, or is anything going on with the old feeds? I don't know what the story is with the site. It kind of died after, I mean, Suave gave it a bit of a try, but after Lore gave up, the whole site just kind of...
You know, and to be honest, let's save some hosting money. Let's put it all under one roof, and then we'll have a better. We'll actually have somebody looking at security.
Well, I like that Suave is also running a that he's also running a the file server, though, because that means if I just up and disappear, the whole thing doesn't die.
Well, there's that. And we could always keep it as a file server and just cross post. There's a lot of things going on in the background.
Yeah, that's all inside baseball. So, we'll get a hold of Suave and RU and beat them. We'll just play first person shooters until somebody comes up with an idea. That said, just a quick little programming note for Galaxy 15. For fun, I'm going to replay the live broadcast from Gen Con on the stream directly after this show. In fact, let me just check our old broadcast box here. And, yes, actually, almost immediately after I hit, basically I hit the button when we're done broadcasting, our show, and the live show will play again.
Cool.
So we're gonna run that.
For those of you using the Android OS on your smartphone, get the program Power Amp. It's free, and it does an amazing job of equalizing things out. And well, it's got a software preamp, which is nice for boosting you a little bit.
Is that a Android app that'll actually pick up the stream versus having to use the Flash Player?
You know what? I think it actually does queue files. So yeah.
Well, no, that's the thing. Was I know a lot of people have had a hard time finding an Android app that will pick up the stream. That was one of the reasons everybody was very happy about the Flash Player on the site, is they could get the stream to work on their Android phones through that.
Well, the one I've been using is the old-time free one, is AOR Radio.
Oh, okay. Well, I've had tons of people tell me they couldn't find a streamer for it, so...
No, there's one. But anyway, the point is, that one, very, very clear, even on the 128-bit audio file. So if you're going to download the actual... high quality, done over a real mixer, playback of our Gen Con recording. That's what you want. You want a really good, because don't ruin, you know, you're going to get spoiled. That's the best audio that we are ever going to have until we get up into a group again. So enjoy it.
Yeah, no, that is a really sweet recording. And I've ensured that certain individuals have copies of the RAW. So I'm hoping we have some fun with that. So anyways, let's go ahead and roll into some current events here. First thing I've got on the docket is this. I got it off Softpedia. It's an opinion piece, but it's essentially big media companies want a police state to control piracy. And I get some pull quotes here out of it. One of the proposed solutions, anti-infringement software that people would, quote unquote, voluntarily install in their homes. The media
voluntarily not use their hardware entirely.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you will voluntarily do this, or we will voluntarily beat you to death. Let's see here. Where was I? Media let me finish the quote, man. The media industry sees it as a antivirus software for copyrighted files. They'd monitor your computer and warn you, or maybe even delete, if the analogy were to go all the way, infringing files. And then they also go on later in the article and say that they're that a lot of these big media companies really like the example of China when it comes to, you know, enforcing laws and copyright on their people. So I get the link off the show notes. Read this article. I don't want to read the whole thing on the air because it's long. Well, it's not really long, but it's too long to read. It's very after now. It pulls a lot of points from a lot of different places, but it's just like, yeah, they want a police state.
Yeah.
All right, what were you going to say, Heavy?
So we're almost there. The Chrome OS browser as OS is encrypted, and it meets the standards of a lot of the streaming companies. Hulu hasn't signed on yet, but I'm pretty sure they will shortly. And here's the thing. If the big media companies want to do this, what they will do is they'll sell a chunk of their media or access to a chunk of their media for a certain amount of time.
They already do that with Netflix. That's why they have stuff that goes up on their online streaming and disappears all the time.
But the point is, they'll make the hardware just negligible, and the poor folk will go out and lap them up, and then they will have their control OS. So it's there. It's pretty close anyway.
Were you going to try to say something, Knox?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought I'd charge you.
Anyways, so that's. I'm just saying, it's getting pretty close, and it's already out there as a saleable product. I just think they need to make the price point low enough, and it'll happen.
Yeah, until somebody hacks it and just puts Ubuntu on that Chrome OS. Actually, you know, I haven't looked at the Chrome OS stuff too tightly or too much. I've played with it on a couple of netbooks, got it up and running. I wasn't really impressed. I didn't.
No. You're talking about Chromium. Chrome OS on the hardware they've got it on is encrypted at the what the hell do they call that new BIOS?
Oh, they've got it at the EFI level.
Yep.
That's okay. Fine. They've encrypted the drive, and that's great for privacy concerns. But Chromium is the open source version of Chrome. I'm sure it's not exactly the same, but even then, when I was playing with it, man, I wasn't impressed. I'm not going to buy any netbook with Chromium on it or Chrome OS on it. It's a browser. I've got plenty of decent machines. I'd like a real laptop, thank you.
You know, as we point out, you're definitely one of the, or we are the outside, you know, case of this, because I know some people perfectly happy getting onto their social media site of choice, being able to play their Flash games and listen to their streaming audio, and that's all they really want for a new little email here and there.
I don't know. Knox, what do you think? Could you buy a Chromium or Chromebook, whatever they're called?
No.
Yeah, that's kind of my response, too.
I game on my PC, so kind of need Windows.
Yeah, I mean, do they even have Flash on them?
If I was buying one for my grandma, sure, she could have Chromium.
Okay, they do have Flash. I wasn't sure on that, because I know Chrome has its own build of Flash, but I thought Adobe was giving them some shit for that, so maybe that was something else. But anyways, let's see what's the next one here. This is an Engadget one, and this is not the first time that this has come up. Intel's doing their whole charge you $50 for an unlock code to speed up their low-end CPUs. They've done this before, and the article's pretty hateful of Intel, really, for it. You know, it says they're taking advantage of people in the low-end market and blah, 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 blah. And truth of the matter is, it's an artificial upgrade. They're intentionally underclocking their chip or crippling it. Supposedly, they're selling it cheaper, and then they're selling an unlock code to bring it back up to speed. This is...
That doesn't sound ethical.
Well, the thing is, Intel's done this for years. This isn't anything new. They've done it before, actually, with, I think it was Gateway, where they would sell a underclocked CPU. Supposedly, they're charging less, and then you enter their unlock code, and it speeds the chip up, so it's like an upgrade without having to open up the case, right?
This actually doesn't make sense to me so much on a, you know, end user point of view. I mean, I can see it in a server. You sit there, you get the 64-core server, you know, and then as you need more power, you unlock it. But for an individual, you got, like, what, a 6-core, and you get it clocked down to a 4-core or something for $50?
Well, okay, what they do... Yeah, Intel has, they've done this in the server market for decades, literally. What they'll do is they'll sell you a box, and it will physically have, I don't even know what the current numbers are, but, you know, you might be right, it might be something like 64 cores. And then they'll only charge you for, I don't know, if you're only using, say, 32 of them. Supposedly, they only charge you for the 32, and then if you decide you need the 64, you call Intel, you give them your credit card number, pay for what you need, and they'll kick them on. They'll get into your machine. This is with like managed servers and stuff, but they've done this for a long time. And the idea is so you can bring in more CPU horsepower when you need it, especially because you get a lot of stuff in the business world where you're like paying software licenses per core, and I mean things get really expensive really quickly, and it's almost silly. But doing it on the desktop market. The thing is, I'm not so sure that they're doing the other end that makes this work, which is charging less for the initial chip, because these are already low end laptops, so they're already like what, $300?
Yeah,
I mean, how much are they knocking off the cost of the chip here to do this?
That was my point, is, you know, make it something real, make it $100. You know, it doesn't seem like it's worth it. I would always just pay the extra $50. And have the full process.
Well, I wouldn't buy a laptop that was crippled like that in the first place. That's just me. But this is the real question. Isn't this just a software driver? I mean, we're not talking about IBM System M or their Unix stuff. We're talking about desktop PCs running Windows, right?
And I'm sure somebody will go in there and figure it out.
Oh, yeah, and just hack it.
Yeah.
Or you get the whole keygen thing going on to get in there. But if it is just a software driver, what happens if I drop Linux on my box? Does it suddenly run at full speed because the Linux machine doesn't know to cripple itself? Or does it do the opposite? Does it like, it's like, oh, well, you're not using our special Windows driver that tells the CPU to run faster, so, you know, or is it a BIOS thing? I mean, if they do it right, it'd be hardware, it'd be OS independent, right?
To be honest, I think this is going to die at the retail level. I think retailers aren't going to want to fuck around with this. They're going to say, I'm not going to explain this to my customers. you know.
Well, that yeah, that's the real thing. Is how do you explain this to your customers?
Now, what they would find useful for is next gen consoles to stretch them out even further than they did this generation, which is still woefully underpowered.
Well,
to be honest,
yeah.
The next gen console, they're going to go back to standard, which is they're going to all run real graphics cards, because they've already stated this, and they're actually just going to run the the PowerPC core upgrade. So it's actually not. I mean, it's going to be standard hardware now. So.
Well, that's what the PS3 is already doing. It's well, at this point, it's an older gen of it, but they've just got a stack of PowerPC chips in those things, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Pretty much. Actually, I think the Xbox, too. I know the old Xbox is actually running an Intel Celeron. I'm not sure what the 360 has in it, to be honest. I got to be honest. I don't follow the consoles anymore. I don't hardly get to game that much anymore, so I just don't keep up with them.
No, I agree with you, Knox. Again, as a retailer, I don't want to explain how somebody has to pay extra for something they've already bought. You know, I want to sell my bundle. You know, I want to say you have to buy two extra games and, you know, another dozen controllers and look at this cool widget that ties all the cables together, you know, and mark all that shit up a lot. I don't want to sell an extra $50 thing. It just doesn't make sense. So
I think the idea was that you would come back later and buy it as like an upgrade. But again, I mean, you're crippling your hardware here to give yourself an artificial upgrade. And I mean, I can see it with the old servers where you're turning on more chips and the chips are already physically in the box. That way you don't have any downtime. That made sense. But in a desktop machine, it's not that big a deal to open the thing up. So,
exactly.
I don't know. Next one here. This one's off Dark Reading. Apparently at B-Sides, H.D. Moore unleashed a new version of Warvox. For you guys who are not aware, Warvox is a war dialing program. And the new version of it is pretty much meant to be included with used with Metasploit. It uses straight into Postgres, and he apparently wrote a VoIP module for Ruby so that he could write this Warvox thing, and it uses VoIP instead of a modem, but it's WarDialer. This probably should be under Digital Dojo, to be honest, but the thing that had my interest in this was he's got audio fingerprinting in this thing. During the B-Sides talk, he demonstrated identifying phone numbers that had the same person either on the voicemail or who had answered the phone.
Exactly. This is basically celebrity stalking.
No, man. This is in Metasploit. This is a way of identifying multiple phone numbers for a single individual in a pen test of in a business. That is... Well, I mean, that's nuts. Plus, too, you find all kinds of old computer equipment still hooked up to modems. I've got a few modems in the closet. Does anybody still use modems?
Actually, believe it or not, a lot of folks
A lot of
have.
Businesses do, yeah.
Yep. But where I see this having real value is all of, again, and you mentioned it, all the VoIP services that people have out there, and basically getting back into trying to use their legacy landline connection services to get into them that way. So I think that, this is definitely...
No. This uses a VoIP service. This is not using your modem. This is not using legacy landline. This is using VoIP.
Yeah,
this would be a way of getting at the old modems that are still on landlines. You've got it backwards.
Yeah, but it could still dial into a Skype, account and try to access, if you're using, the software.
I think you're getting your software confused, man. This is like SIP.
Yeah. I understand.
Okay.
So, I'm saying that maybe right now it isn't set up to do it, but if you use your SIP client, you could definitely get into...
you can get anything with a phone number.
yeah, but essentially using that to find a backdoor through your Skype to do some sort of exploit to actually get into your box is what I'm saying.
I think you're reading way too deep into that.
I may be.
This is...
Next year we're at DEF CON, we'll see what they came up with.
Well, this was a B-Sides, not DEF CON. But, okay. This is for information gathering. This is for finding phone numbers, finding equipment. Did you ever do any old school war driving, Heavy?
Yeah, I had the old,
war driving, war dialing. My God.
Well, I was going to say war dialing basically into the old BBS system back in the day.
I'm trying to find the BBSs, You find all kinds of weird modems and shit hooked up to stuff. I used to find switches hooked up to modems. I guess that's how people were doing remote administration. I always thought that was interesting. Knox, you might be a bit on the young side for war dialing. Do you ever you have any idea what I'm talking about with it?
Less, but seems similar.
War dialing is the idea of instead of it's sort of like port scanning on the network side, but for telephones. You essentially give it a range of telephone numbers, it calls them all and tries to find modems or voicemail boxes or. You know, since it's got this voice fingerprinting thing in, you could, I guess if you knew the voicemail boxes for people, you could have it call into all their voicemail and ID them. And then if you find, then that way if they answer their phone, you can tell whose whose phone number is whose. So that's, you know, it's intel gathering is what this is. And the fact that it's got the fingerprinting in it, that's insane. All right. Well, I guess you guys aren't as interested in that as I am. So.
Well, I am interested in. I just my brain's working a little differently on the problem than you are. I see it as a potential exploit, but I could be way off the deep end, and people will just be wanting to get their nostalgia on and set up some boxes for people to find.
That's oh yeah, definitely the old boxes up on modems. Ooh, that'd be a great way to do a capture the flag. Actually, involve some old modem stuff and just tie it into VoIP so that you don't have to. have to go buy a USB modem or something crazy like that. But I don't know, if you find an old laptop or an old modem kicking around somewhere, you might be able to do it. But I mean, your idea of trying to get into somebody's machine by going through their Skype by calling with a SIP client's a little bit far fetched. But I mean, it'd be easier to do Skype to Skype attack. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah, I tell you what, let's we'll bring in, okay. Let's, we'll hit these last two stories, we'll take a break, and then we'll bring him in. Let's see here, next story, Torrent Freak. Anti-piracy lawyers are accusing a blind man of downloading porn. Which, this is just in here purely for comedic value. Let's see, I had some pull quotes out of the article. It is likely that tens of thousands of people have been wrongfully accused, It's likely that thousands of people have been wrongfully accused of sharing copyrighted material, yet they see no other option than to pay up. One of the cases that stands out is that of a California man who's incapable of watching the adult film he is accused of sharing because he's legally blind. Let's see, a little farther down the article. A significant number of the defendants, they're talking about the mass suing of people, especially under John Doe lawsuits here. A significant number of the defendants are likely to be guilty, which is true. I deal with these complaints myself, I know. Most of the time when you get a complaint on somebody, they were doing something. But you get a lot of weird ones, too. Like I said, we've gotten them for printers before. Let's say there's a lot of collateral damage. First, it's unclear how accurate the evidence-gathering techniques of the copyright holders are, because when they tried to compel them in court, we talked about that a few weeks back, when they tried to compel them in court, they wouldn't tell people how they're gathering this stuff, which is awesome when it comes to discovery. And even when they have correct IP address, it doesn't necessarily that the account holder on file is actually the infringer. There's another great article on Torrent Freak. I didn't include it because we didn't do a show last week and it was a little dated at this point. They talked to an EFF lawyer and it was a lot of opinion, but essentially I should go back and find that link. It was on Torrent Freak where they were trying, a lot of the RIAA lawyers tried to say, no, your IP address, you're responsible for it. Whereas the copyright law doesn't actually say that. So, let's see, going back to the article here. This May, he received a letter from Comcast informing him that Imperial Enterprises had filed a lawsuit against him for illegally downloading and sharing one of their adult titles, Tokyo Cougar Cream Pies. Yes, that line's in here just so he could say the name of the porn. To some people, this title may seem inviting, but it's not the type of content Doe 2057 is interested in, Not the least because he's legally blind. To be honest, it's a little ridiculous. My moving watching ability is non-existent. My kids watch movie, but they are 4 and 6, so they don't watch porn either. Well, hopefully they don't, the Doe told Village Voice Media. According to Doe 2057, one of his neighbors must have used his open Wi-Fi to grab the file.
Oh, well, that's believable. after listening to all that, I'm hoping that our wonderful website owner had gotten a couple of audio drops for us to throw in.
Well, what I'm thinking is, even if he's legally blind, the movie's still going to have audio.
Well, and I agree with you.
Perhaps he wanted them high-pitched Japanese moans.
Well, you know, we keep talking about we need to bring in a segment on Galaxy 15 of porn for blind people. The woman is now removing her pants. And, you know, just get a total deadpan, or even better, get like one of those web readers.
Yep. There you go. Well, and that's...
What'd you say, Knox?
Microsoft Steve.
Microsoft Steve reading that out. Oh yeah. Oh, babe. Can't do it. But, yeah. I like how he blames his open Wi-Fi, which is actually quite... That's, you know, I half wonder if it would be better just to leave your Wi-Fi wide open so you had that defense. But I know most ISPs at this point actually have it in their contract that you will secure your Wi-Fi for that very reason.
Yep, there's, especially for the telephone people that are, they all pretty much come with pre-encrypted Wi-Fi. And if you open it up on purpose, then you're actually circumventing their protections.
True.
So,
well, I've noticed a lot of them around here are WEP and pretty easy to break. I mean, Bob noticed they were pretty easy to break into. So,
Yeah.
Bob did that. So, let's see. Last story on current events. Firefox 6 is out. I found an article on Techie Buzz that did a review of it. This was the best part of it. Let's see. Coming back to Firefox 6, biggest piece of new feature is that the address bar now highlights the domain of the website you are currently browsing. The site identity blocker has also received a minor facelift to make it sleeker than before. A few behind the scenes improvements for such as support for WebSockets, improved Scratchpad, new web developer menu, improved web console, and reduced browser startup time when using Panorama. So, yeah, Firefox's versioning system makes absolutely no sense now. New versions of it is out, and they're doing major revisions at this point. Actually, they're talking about just hiding what version of Firefox you're on at this point. I guess I don't understand why they needed to change their versioning system just because they're releasing more often. I mean, what was wrong with doing point releases for bug fixes and then, you know the actual, 5.0, 6.0 releases for new features?
I have no idea. They are not Google. They cannot release as quickly as Google can. And frankly, the product has suffered. It's, unless you run NoScript, it's really slow. And they've still got memory leaks. It's just...
Well, I haven't had a chance to play with 6, even though actually it got posted to their public FTP early. So a lot of people were playing with it yesterday. I think it's actually supposed to have been out today. I haven't had time to mess with it. But
yeah,
I still use Firefox. I like Firefox. It's just I mix it up with
really
Chrome.
I really don't want to get higher and higher numbers here.
Well, I don't see a point to it. I mean, I don't mind them bumping their version numbers up if they do, a feature release or, a good reason to. At this point, though, they're just increasing their numbers they're trying to catch Google Chrome, because I know Chrome's like up onto 14 or some ridiculousness at this point, but I mean, Chrome doesn't advertise their version numbers, so I don't know why they even care.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is they don't have that back end of and actually, I prefer this, where they give you the option to do the updates. See, that is one thing about Chrome, is they're doing all
that. Yeah, it's just shoving it straight onto your machine.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, let's go, yeah, it's about time for a break, so we're just going to... I'm just going to roll with the more Patient Zero, because I'm lazy, and I already have Patient Zero, and it's good stuff. So I think I used this last show, too, for the break music, but I don't care. Actually, I should mention, since today Patient Zero had some pretty good news, he was working with the Yogscast, and they put Diggy Diggy Hole and the extended remix of it on iTunes. and he was slot one and two on the top lists today under the comedy tracks section. And I was talking to him earlier, and he goes, "Yep, I had to prove I was not only better than everybody else, I was also better than myself," in true tack fashion. So,
exactly.
We're going to play some Diggy Diggy Hole. I'm going to now mute the Skype call, and we'll add Suave in while we're waiting.
I feel like we need a song to sing whilst digging. Do you have any ideas? Did he say something funny and sort of lighthearted?
All right, everybody loves a little bit of good Diggy Diggy Hole. We had some communication issues here, so I think I've got the Skype call back. You guys there?
Yep.
All right. We may or may not get Suave back in here. I don't honestly know. We'll see what he says here in just a minute. So while Suave is deciding that, let's roll right into Digital Dojo here. I should get sound effects. I need, like, you know, Kung Fu Fighters or
some transition sounds.
Yeah. Knox, make some good monkish Kung Fu sounds for us. Damn, I was hoping he'd break something. Okay, that works too.
Sweet.
That was actually not bad. I might just clip that and use that and then put a breaking sound in there.
Cool.
Suave said no. So.
No?
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 I don't know.
Okay. Anyways, first one here on the docket, we got this Rolling Programmer article. He calls it hacking Windows passwords with Linux. He's detailing the CHNT password tool. This thing's been around for a while. Very, very handy if you do IT work because it lets you reset Windows passwords. He hilariously calls this hacking. This is not hacking. This is the booting into single user mode to reset passwords. This has been a longstanding Unix tradition. So it's not hacking, but it is a way of getting into a Windows box if whoever owns the machine has lost their password because it assumes physical access to it. So pretty much if you could use this to get into the Windows system, you don't need to use this to get into the Windows system because it assumes you can write to the hard drive and read the Windows system. So, you know, if you need to get the data off the Windows drive, you can always just use the live disk and mount it, and oh, there it is. I mean, now this will not work on encrypted hard drives.
Exactly.
So
this is an old, you know, I mean, again, this is an old tool.
Oh, yeah, there's been plenty of live disks that have this in there. I mean, this is an old tool, but it's handy. It's a good one to know, so I'm just pointing it out. The article is kind of funny because, like I said, the author is like, "Ooh, hacking Windows passwords." It's like, no, it's not. In fact, they even point that out in the comments. But you know, whatever. Let him have his fun. I don't care. It's a good tool, and he's got a good write up on how to use it. So no worries there. Just a little nomenclature issue. Let's see. Next tool here, Firecat. This is cool. This is a it's Firecat.fr. This is, he actually has the, has it spelled out here, Firefox Catalog of Auditing Extensions. It's a collection of a bunch of good Firefox extensions oriented towards auditing and assessing web applications. He's got on here not a replacement for other utilities such as fuzzers, proxies, and application vulnerability scanners. But, you know, it's a lot of good stuff for working with web applications, doing code injection, for example. Just a good collection of Firefox extensions if you need to pick apart web apps for whatever reason. And,
please, coders, please.
Yes, pick apart your own apps.
You know, try to break your own stuff.
there's a reason some of the BS tactics like guys like Anonymous and Lulzsec do work. It's because the coders don't check their stuff with these kind of tools, and Anon does. So
I was actually in a Google Plus chat with a younger programmer from Google, and then there was a couple of older guys that were rolling their eyes in the background. Kids were like, yeah, live user testing is stupid because, you know, the users are stupid. And I'm like, exactly. You want them to hammer on the keyboard with their forehead until they break something so you can go fix it.
But yeah.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. As a programmer, guys, go out there and let a couple of monkeys at your program and then fix it when they break. You know, it's just standard practice.
Well, you know, if you're doing your input validation correctly, it shouldn't matter if they headbutt the keyboard, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, you just throw the appropriate error and go on with life. But, you know, yes, you're absolutely correct. Web application programmers, please check your stuff. This is the reason we have so many websites getting hacked into it's one of them. There's so many ways in. I mean, you want to talk about web application hacking. I mean, one of my favorites is just if you figure out they're on a shared service, just go sign up with the service until you get on to the same physical host, SSHN, privileged ask, oh, and you've got their website. I mean, you know, that's probably a little bit more of a real attack than some of the web application attacks, but I digress. This is a good collection of tools for checking for that kind of stuff. And final item in Digital Dojo here. This is Matrix. I think I'm saying that right. Matriux. It is a Backtrack clone. It's a collection of security testing tools, Metasploit, that kind of stuff. Ready to go on a distro. I think they based it off Kubuntu. And, you know, I've debated back and forth on whether I want to cover, because there's like Black Ubuntu and a bunch of these other, you know, quote unquote pen testing distros out there, and most of them just don't hold a candle to Backtrack. So it's like, well, do I really want to cover these things or not? And I've decided it's better to cover them, because, you know, sure, Backtrack's the go to tool for having a pre built distro. But, you know, what if Backtrack shuts down or they go behind a paywall like Nessus did? Well, I think Nessus, no, I know Nessus still has a free version, but, you know, Nessus went pro. To really use it in an assessment, you have to have the pro version. So what if, you know, I don't know how they could with the licensing of half the stuff they're using, but just, you know, as an example, if Backtrack goes away, it's good to have a list of backups if you need the live distros. And, you know, for me, you know, a lot of these guys out here, you know, you kind of know what tools you need. You build your own setup, but it is kind of handy to have a live disk if you don't have the time.
Well, and actually, this is a good intro to people for Digital Dojos. Again, and I was talking to my massage therapist about this. I said, look, you know, if because again.
Wait a minute. You discuss computer hacking with your massage therapist.
they nod their head and say, oh, that's nice.
Okay.
It's very relaxing for me. When I'm getting a massage, you know, I want to relax. And for me, you know, this kind of stuff is relaxing. And I pay my money just as much as anybody else. It's my hour, you know.
Knox, do you have a massage therapist? And if so, do you discuss computer hacking with them?
You know, it's just what you got to say during the happy ending.
Yep, I can see that. And you need a post-exploitation cleanup towel. Yeah, if you don't know what I'm talking about, listen to Paul.com. They're good guys. Let's see.
So this is basically, but my point is this, is it's a really good intro to people that have not gotten into this thing. You know, say, hey, look, here you go.
Put a couple certainly some together. Of the tools can be... Some of the tools can be rough to get set up. Metasploit used to be hell to get working on a system. These days, it's not so much. Some of the Wi-Fi cracking tools can be a special, you know, especially hard, especially when you got to get into kernel modules and stuff like that. If you don't know what you're doing, this is a quick way to get things up and running.
With the forthcoming, cheap computers, hopefully from the Raspberry Pi folks, Raspberry Pi.org. If you want to go in there and check those out, that's going to be really good cheap intro. Or you go get yourself a couple servers, rip the fans off, and do some water cooling there, so you don't have to listen to the fan whine, and you should be all set. I mean, if you're going to do Digital Dojo, spend a couple $100, get yourself a couple of servers up and running, and actually, you know, try to exploit them, try to break into them, and that's what we've been saying all along. Here's the easy way to get to the tools. Now there's more ways to get to them, so you're not going to get shut off from one source.
I don't honestly expect to get shut off from Backtrack. I'm just, you know, I like covering. Some of these have different sets of tools in them, so it's a good way to try stuff out. So... That said, though, and you don't have to go, you know, spending money on servers. You can just grab a bunch of old boxes and the live disks, and you're pretty much good to go. Because most of these testing distros also make really handy targets, by the way. They almost all of them have really poor passwords, so good way to test for that kind of stuff. So, moving on, I've only got two topics for us to round out the show with tonight. One of them's pretty lightweight, too. I've got a link here. It's to 9sys.com/fun. Because they have something I have been looking for on the internet for a very, very long time. Under Red Hat 5.1, not Red Hat Enterprise, I mean Red Hat 5.1, the Linux that came out in 1998, you could buy it in a box at the office stores because it wasn't feasible to download these things at the time. And yes, how long I've been playing with Linux because I'm insane. I lost my 5.1 disks a very long time ago, and this made me sad, because 5.1 had a language option that I've not seen in any Linux since, and I want to see this again because it's hilarious. Redneck. It's only in the installer. It switches to US when it's done, but it's a custom language file for the installer. And look at some of these screenshots, guys. Click the link and look at them. It's like, where's one of my... Yeah, here it is. Stick your Red Hat CD in that coffee holder on the front. And then instead of okay and okay or back, it's yep and nope.
Does one of the okay buttons say get or done?
No, this is pre Larry the Cable Guy, unfortunately. But like when it's, you got to think this is 1998. But when it's spinning up the CD-ROM, instead of warming up, it says, or warming up or spinning up, it says firing up, and it's spelled firing. Let's see, it calls you Junior a lot. Let's see, it's got partitioning misspelled as partitionun at mountain. it's like back up instead of back.
And, eat it.
Yeah, a lot of stuff is where is it? This used to have this great thing in here. Instead of formatting, it called it floor matting. And
can't sell.
Yeah, scroll through some of these. These are hilarious. And yeah, yep, not forget it. There's options. Yeah, there it is. under active swap space, find them dab bad blocks during floor mat. It's just this was awesome to get a bunch of. I grew up in Kentucky, so I'm used to people talking like this. So it's hilarious to see it on the screen.
That's cool.
And it's I was really sad that I could never find my Red Hat 5.1 discs because I so wanted to make a YouTube video of this. And it's so worth clicking on that link and scrolling through because it's just comedy gold. And it's really unfortunate that they took it out because I would still be installing Red Hat and Redneck mode today for comedic value. So, and the last thing I've got on the list for tonight, Armatus. We saw this game at Gen Con, and the concept was so cool, I had to buy it. Essentially, it's a Starship Bridge simulator, and you set up multiple computers to play this thing, and each computer becomes a station on your Starship. So one computer's your helm, one's your weapons, one's your engineering, one's tactical, one's communications, and one's science, and one's your main screen. This game is so much fun. You know, of course, we were playing this in the hotel room at Gen Con, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You all played it. I was sitting there giving orders, which it's weird as hell to play a video game by giving orders instead of pressing buttons.
The movies were right!
You know, one of the cool things for me was sitting there and saying, all right, I fired off the last two missiles. This was entirely unplanned. And Knox was like, all right, I am transferring power from missile reload to shields. And I'm like, all right, that is freaking awesome. You know, just the ability to have multiple people.
I like how we kept overheating our beams and the crew kept dying.
That only happened once. And then we discovered the coolant.
Yeah, we figured out coolant. But, This thing, I had a couple of friends over this weekend and we were playing, and oh yeah, I mean, you totally start to coordinate, and it's a little weird to order your friends around, although still nothing has quite matched the fun in that game of after Knox blew us up with a nuke too close to one of the bad guys.
Hey, how was I supposed to know nuclear ammunition wasn't melee?
Well, you know, too much World of Warcraft will do that to a person.
No, I think I was thinking Yamato Cannon.
Well, anyway, so we were too close to a nuke and took out like half our ship. And it happened again when I was playing with some of my friends here, so don't feel too bad about it. And, you know, Fox flipping his netbook around and going, pink is bad!
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was great.
Okay, there are 40 system nodes and... three of them were green.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. And
and we had one crew member left alive to repair them all.
You know, following their forums there, and that crew member was busy. Following up on their forums there, he's already talking about revamping comms, so it looks more like TweetDeck, of all things. And I think we're going to see this game just kind of continuously develop, sort of like what we're seeing with Minecraft right now.
Yep, and I would like to point out that Galaxy 15 Radio was the top of the list of the new members, so that's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, that was, you actually use your Twitter handle on their forums, and I wasn't paying attention because I was going to go on there. I was actually talking with a guy on there about, I found an iPad app, actually, called Splashtop, and... The YouTube videos for this thing show people playing StarCraft with it. So I figured it would handle a couple of the different helms in Armatus. It's not perfect. There's some lag. It's not even really lag. It just kind of feels a little sluggish.
One of the things I was thinking about just today was...
What did I say?
You don't actually need multiple machines if you can just open up that many windows and put it on... And keep, just divide
flip
up
flip
the
through them all, yeah. Well, the idea is you have multiple people playing.
Yeah.
It's a LAN party game. You can play over the internet, but it's a LAN party game. And I totally want to see if we can get six ships set up full, you know, with people setting up local groups to play, right? And then we get all the ships together over the internet, and then somebody needs to wear a very large admiral's hat.
So. That's going to be a very loud conversation on Skype.
Not really. If you get everybody set up as local as, you know, as many local groups set up as possible and fill up your ships that way, the only people that need to be on Skype is your comm officers. Because then your captains are, you know, sending and receiving comms, right?
Right.
So, you know, you'd only have six people on the Skype call. That wouldn't be so bad, or TeamSpeak or whatever. And let's see here. Getting back to Artemis a little bit here. First and foremost, the nice thing about this game is it runs well on older hardware. Later DX9 P4 stuff. I pulled out some laptops that are 7 years old and got the game to run.
That's cool.
So that was
nice.
Well,
we were running it on my, you know, mom's 5-year-old laptop that I borrowed, and that thing was just, you know, fine.
Knox, you had a pretty old beater with you too, didn't you? Laptop-wise. Yeah. And it, I mean, you were running it on there. Fox was playing on his netbook.
If I switched to the main view, my frame rate was like 4.
Oh, yeah, these laptops are doing the same thing. In fact, the main view wouldn't even render right. It was all pink and messed up. But, I mean, these things are old machines, so it's not that terribly surprising. And, in fact, one of them, I found a forum post on using this 3D analyze tool to get the game to run at all. And it doesn't, the little window that, you know, lets you pick your resolution and windowed or not, it wouldn't actually show it. You had to click where the button would be to get the game to start. But once it started, it was fine. So that was a little interesting. But the Splashtop app on the iPad was pretty cool when I was playing with that, because it let us put a couple of different helm stations on the iPad using a machine in the other room as a host. You know, it was actually running on the other machine. This thing's a, you know, remote desktop, right? But it was fast enough that you could still play the game versus, like, VNC, which is horrible.
Well, some of the
rate.
Stations you don't really need a good ping rate to do.
Right. Comms and science were the ones that worked pretty well on it. Engineering, not so much.
Yeah, engineering is, like, the busiest screen there is.
Well, that, and it's touchscreen, right? So my finger was a little thick for the size of the window. So that not so much. But yeah, anyways, this game is awesome, and I cannot wait to see where they go with it. I'm also wanting to see about dedicated bridge setups. Could you see setting this thing up if you had the space to do it with, like, large touch panels? Because this game is begging to be played on touchscreen.
In my quest to change my you know, digital dojo, my workstation around, I actually went and started looking at the the hack shop, basically the, you know, pawn shop, and I started looking at the you know, HDTVs, plasmas, as it were. And yeah, I could see getting a nice used plasma, setting it up on a dedicated box, you know.
Having your main screen, yeah.
Yep.
I'm actually going to check out projectors from work when we decide we're going to have weekends where we play this game.
Projectors would be a nice way to go, especially if you can just rent them. I would say, you know, for those of us that if we're going to set up a...
Oh, yeah, permanent bridge, you want to get a nice big TV.
But and then the individual consoles actually don't have to be that big either. You can go ahead.
Yeah,
and
you have a couple guys with inset tables. You have one guy with a CRT monitor, and then you have Spock inside having to look through a periscope into a tiny screen.
Oh, yes, yes. I want somebody to build that periscope now. That would be fun.
That is cool.
So,
yeah,
I want to see that now.
Use that the whole time.
Man, you imagine how bleedy eyed they're going to be at the end of that?
Yep.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Well, I think that's about all we got for tonight. Check out RU's new Open Mic Friday Nights, which I'm not sure when that thing actually broadcasts. I don't know. He's put it on hold. He's probably not going to start it up again until he gets back to Australia, which I understand he's still swimming, so that could be a while. Of course, I Have Nothing every Saturday. Hugo's Newsreel on Thursdays. Always check out the Galaxy 15 site, galaxy15radio.com, and the Twitter handle of Galaxy 15 Radio. And stick around after the show tonight, because we're going to close out with Radiation by Patient Zero. And then I'm going to kick off a rebroadcast of the live I Have Nothing from Gen Con, which
oh,
is...
Oh, gosh, you get to see how beautiful our voices really are. And
it is 2 hours.
Show will be ruined for you forever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I tell you what, that audio is clean and easy to work with. And like I said, okay. I was making sure a few choice individuals got copies of that.
I was listening to it over your laptop speakers, and it was better audio than the actual room that we were in.
Well, because it didn't pick up the background noise. That recording is so clean. You would think we were in a studio. Which, I mean, I had some nice equipment with me, but that's not the point. I mean, it sounds like we're in a freaking studio, not on Skype.
You know, I was actually talking to some of the studio professionals. They prefer the Shure SM57s for that kind of work. Really, really super directional and really clean. So, you know, we're doing, you know, pretty good at that. So I liked it a lot, too. It was definitely real nice.
Well, also, the recording of Sipper we did, I went back and listened to that because we used a little internal mics instead of the mixer on the Sipper. And it sounds like you're sitting in that room with us. I'm going to have to check out those recorders again. Those things are nice. The only problem is I'm not spending $400 on one, but they're nice.
And I'll bring this, if you want to stay on and chat a little bit afterwards, I want to bring a couple of subjects up. But let's get into our plugging our hand, our different social media.
I've already plugged them.
Oh, you plugged them? I plugged Heavy Metal at HAEVYMETALL.
Okay, fine. Plug your shit.
All right, cool. That's it. That's all I wanted.
Knox, plug your stuff.
youtube.com/user/timekit.
There you go.
All right, so let's see. I'm going to mute the Skype call and play out the show.
Shit. Hang on a minute. Give me a second. Oh, wow. That's okay. Let's keep going.
Radiation.
Wait, what the fuck was this song about anyway?